Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
Way back in 2005, two brothers set off on a road trip that would save the world and change television.
Daniel and Billy Baldwin.
That's a different road trip. For 15 seasons and 327 episodes, Supernatural took audiences on a wild ride of family, fate, and faith with a rocking soundtrack and a seriously cool car.
But that was then, Bobbo, and this is now. And yes, the show has quote-unquote ended, but we're not quite done with the journey.
No, we're not.
And that's why we're watching it all over again, or for Rob and me, for the first time.
That's right.
Diving deep into every episode of Supernatural with the fine folks who made it. And we're taking you along for the ride.
Whether you like it or not. I'm Rob Benedict. I played Chuck Shirley, a.k.a. God.
Spoiler!
Yeah, it is a bit of a spoiler, but hey, spoilers are fair game here.
I'm fine. And I'm Richard Spate Jr., and I played the Trickster, also known as the Archangel Gabriel. And I did a little bit of Loki work in there.
Okay, you know what? We're running out of time.
Okay, well, we'll be talking about the entire series, so whatever we say, accept it. You've been warned.
So buckle up and settle in.
Because this, my friend, is Supernatural, then and now.
Hey, everybody, I'm Rob Benedict.
And I go by the moniker Richard Spate Jr.
And we're here to talk about Season 2, Episode 16, Roadkill.
Roadkill, Bobbo.
Roadkill. Well, let me tell you what this one's about, Rich.
Tell us all about it in what I like to call the summary.
A couple, Molly and David, are driving along a desolate road at night. It's their anniversary, and David gets a little handsy with Molly as she drives.
Like you do. And I mean specifically you, like you do.
Yeah. Yeah. And he makes her drive. I don't know.
Not a fan of women drivers, Robbie?
No, I love women drivers. I'm not a big fan of David. Suddenly, there's a man standing in the middle of the road, and Molly must swerve to avoid hitting him. The car careens over the side of the road and crashes into a tree.
Oh, no.
Molly comes to, and David is gone.
Oh, no.
She ventures into the woods looking for him.
Never good.
No. She comes upon the man who is standing on the road, the man that she swerved to miss, and he has a gaping wound in his stomach. So she runs back to the road and flags down a car. Guess what? It's Sam and Dean in the Impala.
Well, that's convenient.
Yeah. The brothers decide to help. She takes them to the crash site, but the damaged car is gone.
Where'd it go, Bubba?
Well, we don't know yet. So Sam and Dean try to take her to help. She wants to find her husband, David. She's got to find her husband, David. But suddenly, the wounded man is standing on the road again. Dean decides he's going to gun it and run the spirit down. So he drives right through him and baby's engine dies.
Oh, no.
So the brothers explain to Molly that they hunt spirits, and they're here investigating the ghost of Jonah Greeley, a farmer who died on this road 15 years ago. He haunts it every 15 years. Molly continues to be concerned about her husband, David. David, geez. He must be lost in the woods. he must be lost in the woods. So they go to Greeley's hunting cabin to look for his bones, so they salt, burn, and bury them. Greeley's ghost attacks Molly. Dean blasts it with a shotgun.
Which, by the way, it looked very much like he was going to shoot Molly at that moment. I wasn't really sure of the perspective there.
I thought so, too. And even it goes right through the ghost, but it never hits Molly.
Yeah.
Anyway, the group is able to escape and locate Greeley's house. They head inside to investigate. In the attic, they find the long-rotted corpse of Greeley's wife hanging from a noose, along with a box of photos and love letters. The ghost is back and grabs Molly. What'd you feel about the corpse in the attic?
Well, a couple of things. Number one, it means those love letters weren't that effective.
True.
Like, you know, we're supposed to believe that they're all lovey-dovey, and then the next thing you know, she, you know, takes herself out with a stack of love letters right next to her.
I also think it's maybe time to put the house on the market. You know what I mean?
Yeah, good point.
Sam notices that there is a tree out front that wasn't there in the pictures.
That's a classic Sam move. He's always noticing trees.
He loves the trees. He tells Dean that trees are sometimes used as grave markers. So they split up.
Wait. Yeah. Sam and Dean split up? Like they're over?
No. Just for the plan, the heist, the moment.
What a relief.
They split up. You go that way, I'll go this way.
Okay.
Dean goes to rescue Molly. Sam heads to dig up salt and burn the bones.
Wait, what? Sam does say that again? I'm confused and I'm reading it with you.
Sam heads to dig up salt and burn the bones.
Yeah, it sounded like you were saying he was heading off to dig up salt.
Right, that's which not. Salt doesn't grow underground.
No.
Dean is about to be stabbed by the spirit when Sam sets fire to the bones. The boys admit they know where the husband is. They take Molly to a house where she sees him living with another woman.
David!
Huh?
I'm just shocked by David's behavior.
Ah, David, I know. Give me a break. Sam and Dean explain that Molly is a spirit who needs to accept her fate. She died in the accident from the opening, along with the farmer, and it happened in 1992. She accepts that she is dead, and her spirit moves on.
Oh, man. Let's dive into a review here right now. Let's just review it.
It's a real sixth sensian reveal at
Sixth
the
end. Sixth sensian is right. There's even a Haley Joel Osment reference in the middle of the story.
Indeed.
I thought it was great, though. I thought the episode was really good. So well done. First of all, Trisha Helfer, who plays Molly, is so good in that role. And by the way, that episode lives or dies on the talent of that actress. You know what I mean? Whoever plays Molly, because it's somebody cheesy, the whole thing is doomed.
Right.
She was great. The boys were great, as always, sensitive to her plight in a really cool and nuanced way. And the elements, like the car crash was unbelievable. So well done.
Really well done.
So well done. And so it just starts with a bang right off the top. And I didn't see the story coming. I thought the whole thing was a great surprise.
Yeah, same. At first I was kind of like, okay, wait, what's going on here? What's up with this one? Because it's the format is very different than what we've seen already. So I'm going, all right, what is this? And then, you know, the more it unfolds, the more I'm like, oh, this is genius. And I loved the reveals at the end. And I love that they switched it up and that the episode begins with Sam and Dean like mid into their mission. And and Trisha was amazing. She, like you said, not everybody could pull that off. It really was her episode. And, you know, less about the boys in a way. Because, you know, when they're talking about, like, Sam's talking to her and he's having a heart-to-heart with her about how dead people or that people have to, when they just have to accept their fate or something like that.
Yeah.
And I thought he was talking somehow about him or his dad or, you know, or something. But really, then they flash that back again. It's like, oh, he's talking about her and what she needs to do.
It's really well done because all of those moments pay off. They never feel heavy-handed, thanks to great writing, great performing, and great directing. You never see the tip of the cap coming. It's just really well done. And just a beautiful moment at the end. And I like the sort of disparate views of the brothers sort of arguing like, well, I don't like them. You know, Dean's non-sympathetic approach to Jared's sympathetic approach. And then both of them watching her go off and kind of moved in their own unique ways by the experience. It's very cool.
Yeah, the boys have never seemed so, you know, good cop, bad cop than in this episode. I mean,
right.
And then at the end, during the reveal, it all kind of makes sense. Because during the episode, I'm like, wow, Dean really is like, doesn't care about this woman. Like he's like, look, we're just going to do the job and get out of here. You know, he's like, the way he's treating her is very dismissive, you know?
And now you know why.
She's dead. And then Sam is very like sympathetic. And I'm like, wow, Sam's really got a thing for this lady. But then I realized at the end what that's about. So I give it, if we're going to do beards, I'm going to give it, you know, when you first go in and you get your beard cut, short, and if you go somewhere to get your beard cut and you come out and you're like, oh no, I don't think I'm gonna like it, but then you give it a couple days and it's a great beard.
Wait a minute, so where is that in the thickness level of beard?
It's short and really well groomed.
So you're giving it a George Michael.
I'm giving it a George Michael that at first when you come out of the barber you go, oh no, I got the George Michael, and then a couple days later you're like, you know what, George Michael's where it's at.
I'm going to go, and I feel like a broken record, I'm going Stapleton. I thought it was great. I just thought every beat of it played really, really well. Again, season 2, delivering high watermarks across the board.
Yeah.
So it does not get a full Loggins, Kenny Loggins from Rob, but it gets a nice, steady, firm George Michael. For me, it gets a Stapleton. So good job, episode.
Yeah, it's a George Michael. I mean, it's a classic. It's one for the ages.
All right, listen, we have...
Guess who we have?
No, I'm going to tell you. You guess who we have. Let's both guess who we have. Yeah, okay. You know what? We're so excited. You and I are stepping over each other because we're super thrilled to have this person.
Yes.
She's somebody that I know you've partied with like a mofo, and I've never met. But she's awesome and such a great, great talent.
You know her from Lucifer. Both Rich and I are big fans of her work in Lucifer. And also Van Helsing. So much stuff this lady has done. And she is perhaps best known as Cylon number 6 from Battlestar Galactica.
A series I still need to watch, by the way. You know, Tom O'Pinnicott's in it. We have a lot of friends in that. I need to watch that show.
Ladies and gentlemen, Tricia Helfer. We're excited to have you.
I'm happy to be here.
Yeah, thank you for making time.
Of course. First, I want to ask you, are you guys doing this podcast, like you're doing the entire series every episode?
Yeah, so every episode is an episode of the show that we are just watching for the first time.
I did a podcast on Battlestar Galactica, the same thing, a rewatch of the entire show called Battlestar Galactica.
Oh, awesome.
So I beat you guys to it, but you guys have a lot more seasons to cover. So
yeah, we're going to be...
You lived through yours. We're going to die doing ours.
So. Yeah. Yeah. So, okay. So Roadkill. So we love the episode. We love you in the episode. You're awesome. What a great role to have gotten. My first thought looking at it is it had to be hard to shoot because there was so much exterior and the weather did not look nice.
No, that was one of the, I mean, this is so many years ago now that it's like when you guys asked me to do this, I'm like, oh, I got to go back and watch that. I mean,
right.
It's so long ago. What do I remember and what do I not? I remember the character's name. I remember the story, but I definitely remember the weather. It was Vancouver, January. I think it was January, December or January. And it was either pouring down rain and just above freezing. Or it was sleeting and like just below freezing. And trying to run through the forest and in nothing but a t-shirt and a very thin jacket. It was freezing.
Yeah.
We watch these episodes and we've been in some episodes and Vancouver weather is, you know, always an extra character in the show, like how crappy it is. But your episode looked like Vancouver weather plus. Like it literally looked like every time you guys were outside, it was a downpour. It looked awful.
And just cold.
It was cold. It definitely, I didn't have to act in terms of I had to act to pretend I wasn't as cold as I was, but it did help bring, you know, some of the I don't know, the isolation, the character, you know, just what she was going through running through the forest. But I do remember Jared and Jensen at one point, and they got to, because I was really heavy in the episode. So, and you know, a lot of, I think it was an episode that Jared and Jensen were quite a bit light. I mean, they're never light in an episode, but they got to go home a few times without doing all-nighters and being out in that cold. And I remember at one point, as they were leaving, you know, at 11 o'clock at night or something, they were thanking me. They're like, oh my God, we're so glad you're going through this and not us. And we get to go home. And
oh my God.
What gentlemen?
Yeah.
what
and
class
they invited me into their car, you know, the show car. They did. Right. They were gentlemen and invited me in to warm up in the show car with them at one point.
So how did you come about finding yourself on the Supernatural set? Was that a show? Did you read for it? Had you read for it before? And this was another time, like walk me through the journey on how you arrived on the show.
I had not read for it. And it was one of those very nice, circumstances where you just get offered it.
Nice.
Yes. So I was still relatively new to acting, I think, because that was the second season of, oh no, I'd been at it a couple of years, but I was up there doing Battlestar Galactica.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Up there, meaning Vancouver. And,
sure.
And do you know what year this was? I know it was the second
season. Hold on.
We do. We have cheat sheets.
March 15th, 2007. That's when it aired.
Okay. So
shot in January makes
January
sense.
January 2007.
Yeah, January 2007.
Okay. So I'd been acting for 5 years at that point. I guess it was later in Battlestar than I thought, but I was up there. Yeah, so I was just fortunate and got the offer. Yeah.
But did you know what you were going to? Like, so now you got an offer. You got an offer for a show called Supernatural that you had never heard of, or had you heard of it? Like, what was the story?
No,
there?
I had heard of it. Of course. I mean, I think it started out a hit. I could be wrong, but I mean, it's you guys know the show's massive, right?
Right. Yeah.
And I don't know if it started out as massive or it built to that, but I was aware of the show. Yeah. I'm not a big TV watcher. And
right.
And I will admit that when I first got offered the show, I knew the premise. I knew enough about the show, what it was, right? But I had this idea at the time, again, not a big TV watcher. I grew up without a television, and like, I'll go weeks with nothing but news on while I'm making tea and feeding my cats, you know, and,
right.
And then I'll do.
Now, where did you grow up? Are you from Texas also?
No, I'm from Alberta, Canada.
Oh, you're from, you're Canadian.
That's Canada's Texas though.
So it is Canada's Texas. Okay. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Exactly.
Oh, you're Canadian. That's exciting.
Well, I'm American now too, but I grew up in Alberta. And so a lot of times I'll just go without anything and then I'll binge something crazy and do nothing but watch it while I'm watching the show. But
yeah.
At that time, I don't think there was much binging going on, you know, but I had the idea at the time, like the CW was like a kids network. I don't know why, but I just assumed it was like a show for teenagers. So I just never even turned on, like, kind of, you know. And then I remember when I got the offer, my husband, now ex-husband, had a small law firm, and his assistant, she went ape shit, and she was in her 40s at the time. And I just remember she was so beside herself that she knew somebody that was going to be on her favorite show. And she was somebody that stayed up. He had to have two assistants because he would have to have somebody that came in the morning when he showed up at like 8 a.m. because she stayed up till 3 or 4 a.m. every night writing erotic fan fiction for Supernatural.
Oh, okay.
Hello.
I'm listening.
So she was like, she was more the 12, like the noon to 8 p.m. assistant. But she was really good. So my ex, you know, he's like, that's fine. I'll have somebody else for a few hours in the morning. But that's when I first realized, oh, so this is like a 40-year-old woman that is insane about this show. Maybe a kid's show. Like that was my first indication of it. Yeah.
That's super funny. And by the way, you're not wrong. I think back then, I don't know if it was still WB in season 2, but it was a WB show that became CW. And we, as Rob and I are discovering the show, watching it, we consistently joke like how effing different Supernatural must have felt in the landscape back then, because the other shows on that network were James Vanderbeek standing in a rowboat thinking about life. You know, like, you know, it's a whole different alpha charged show. It's very different than what was on that network. I mean, your thought process, I don't think was wrong. I think that was sort of the surprise of that show. It was a very different vibe.
Okay. So I'm not completely off base there.
No, not at all.
No.
And then how did you find the boys? How was working with Jensen and Jared? Did they play pranks on you, or were they gentlemen?
They were gentlemen. I didn't actually work with them too much, right?
Right.
Because
I know you have a lot of your stuff on your own, but you have a fair amount of scenes with them, like at the house and.
Yeah. No, they were lovely. I remember because the whole crew and everybody called them the boys. So I also thought they were younger than they were. So I kind of like, and I'm older. So I didn't call them the boys to them. It just sort of, they were the boys, and they were absolutely lovely. They didn't play any pranks on me. They didn't do anything untoward. They were absolutely lovely.
Good,
nice to work with. Good to work with. There was one funny story. Cause I'm very tall. At least it's funny to me. I'm very tall. So I don't, you know, I know about lighting and everything, obviously, but both of them are really tall, and particularly Jared. Right. And I remember in one scene, I just wasn't paying attention. We were kind of like in a triangle layout. And I just, when I walked up to them or whatever the blocking was, I would place myself, I'd be blocked. He would be blocking my light. And I wasn't paying enough attention because I'm not used to people like blocking my light. I'm used to blocking other people's lights.
Right.
And having to be aware of like the light on them when I walk into frame. And that was kind of my first experience of somebody being taller than me on set.
I can imagine. It's not the first time Rob and I have had somebody taller than us on set. But I will
not
say,
by long shot.
Jared blocks the light of a lot of people, and I mean emotional light. Sometimes he's just squelching that. I'm kidding. That's awesome that you had a good experience with those guys. I'm not surprised, you know, sort of a through line. And by the way, I know we're doing a podcast about the show, so there's probably an inclination for people to go, they were lovely. But the truth of the matter is they ran a good set, man. They were good team leaders on that show for its entire run, which is handy when you, A, are doing all so much heavy lifting, and B, when the weather's so crappy. I mean, the last thing you need is a couple of sour apples refusing to come out of their trailer.
Absolutely. And that, you know, the hours that they would have worked, and, you know, with the type of show, a lot of nights, right?
Yeah, a lot of nights.
A lot of nights.
And like you said, then you come in and this role is kind of different than what we'd, the whole episode is different than, again, we're watching it for the first time. So in the structure of how the season's going, this is different from the top, the way that the boys, you know, kind of enter mid mission and find you. And it really is Molly's story. It really is your episode, which is cool because they don't always do that.
Gosh, I think Bravi, I feel like you could count on one hand the amount of times in all 15 seasons that this was sort of the role reversal. It was truly a really well done episode. I mean, so, which leads me to ask, and a lot of times people don't necessarily bond with their TV director, but this is directed by Charles Beeson. Charles Beeson, this is his second episode of Supernatural. His first episode, Rob, was that unbelievable, creepy kids in the house one, right?
Yeah.
So do you recall any experiences with Charles? Was that an experience you remember?
It's going to be so bad that I say not particularly. And that's probably a good thing, because I just remember having a good experience.
No, I'm actually not surprised. I think in the world of TV, when you're a guest and you're coming in, you have so much to worry about in terms, especially your role in this case, you are spinning all the plates of the nuance of this character and also being the new kid at school,
right,
and meeting everybody. You don't necessarily, you're just trusting that the director is steering you the right direction, and you know what I mean, like letting him do what he's supposed to do, him or her. So it doesn't surprise me at all. Also, Beeson is a British gentleman, like he's a quieter fella,
right? Yeah, as far as I like, if I'm working with somebody and I love direction, like I love a back and forth with a director, and when you work with somebody multiple times,
right,
then, you know, if you're a regular on a series and you have like kind of the guys that or gals that keep coming back, and you get to develop a shorthand. I love that, and I love to be directed. But yeah, it is as a guest, it's harder coming in and you're just trying to remember everybody's names, and everybody's new, right? You know.
Yeah.
But no stories probably means that I had a very good experience with them.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah, and you know, I never worked with Beeson, but from what I gather, he was a more kind of let you do your thing kind of director. Didn't make it about him, which is a very generous man that way.
I agree. I actually worked with him at one point, and I think he gave one note in the episode. It was a great note. It was like, oh, it was like one of those, oh, right, man.
Yeah.
But that's kind of cool. Like, he wasn't just noting for note's sake. You know what I mean?
Right. Yeah. I sometimes, though, like if there are no notes, I'll sometimes like walk up and I'll just kind of walk up to Video Village or walk up to the director and just kind of stand there and go, I can't remember who I did this with. And I was like, but aren't you going to tell me anything? What do you need me to do different? He's like, no notes is good, means good. Just do the same. I'm like, okay, I need to be told I'm good then.
Yeah,
exactly.
To go back in there and go, oh yeah, I'm doing it right.
Yeah, yeah.
I immediately positive go, feedback. No notes means it's so bad that they
they've given up.
Right?
Exactly. Go ahead and give me a compliment. I'm okay with that.
I'm right here.
Okay, guys, hold on. We're coming right back.
You can sense it calling out to you.
New reality seeks you.
Join the journey to save Anomaly.
Place where sound is magic. The only way to enter the world is by looking inward.
Along the way, you'll learn potions, chants, and enchantments that will help you both in that reality and yours.
So, answer the call and let your campaign begin.
Featuring the voices of Ruth Connell from Supernatural and Dead Boy Detectives.
There are ordeals ahead, yet with guidance, you will face them head on without fear.
Todd Stashwick from Star Trek Picard and 12 Monkeys.
When the time arrives, wherever your journey takes you, be there with no attachments.
And R&B singer N.C. Gray.
There are worlds, realms, dimensions, and realities beyond yours.
Anomaly is a role-playing meditation podcast that takes you into a world of magic and fantasy. You'll be invited to imagine yourself in scenarios such as learning to cast a tranquility spell or exploring a land vanquished by a dragon, but all connected by a shared mythology. The goal of guided fantasy role-playing meditations are to help you cultivate a sense of wonder, curiosity, balance, and joy in your inner world. Role-playing meditation is a form of escapism and relaxation, as well as a creative outlet for the imagination. The first campaign is an introduction to the world of Anomaly, its lands, magic, and secrets. In the 8 chapters, you'll stretch your imagination, learn to center yourself, offer forgiveness, find confidence, relieve stress, and stop racing thoughts. Your true self will emerge, allowing you to manage your goals and dreams without confusion, distrust, or self-doubt. You can find it on Spotify, Apple, and wherever you listen to podcasts. Or visit seekanomaly.com to learn more. Anomaly spelled with an I-E, not a Y.
Seek Anomaly. Hear its magic.
Thanks for listening, everybody. And now back to the episode.
Here's a question for you. So you're an experienced performer. You get offered this show. You've talked about Jared and Jensen, and that's great. How did you find the crew? You obviously are not new to the biz, but you were new to that set.
Yeah.
And that's always that awkward first day or whatever. How was your experience with the Supernatural crew overall?
Oh, wonderful. Very, very kind, very, very aware of the difficulties of the shoot with the weather and the hours and things, and just very, very giving in terms of being aware and being present and, you know, wardrobe, making sure they're there with the warm-up cozy right afterwards, or... And just very welcoming too. Like, you know, you said it, you're the new kid in school or something. Crews can really make a difference with making you feel welcome. And the longer you're in the business, I guess I've been in the business 4 or 5 years at that point. The longer you're in the business, the more times you're going to show up at a set where you know people that you've worked with before or something.
Right. Sure.
But right. I can't remember if I had at that point or not, but Vancouver crews, I mean, people are so nice up there, right?
Oh, like, Canadians in general are so lovely.
I don't think I've ever had a bad crew in Vancouver. And there's been so much filming. I can't remember back then, because I guess it was so long ago. But the crews as well, there's so much infrastructure for filming now that there's really experienced, good crews. You know, I've shot in a couple of places before, I won't mention them. But it was like they were just getting there. You know, the state had just given the tax credit to try and get some filming going and
okay.
Newer.
So we know it's the U.S. because you said state. Yes. So we're narrowing it down.
And not great people, but just more inexperience. And, you know, you don't really find that in Vancouver. You've got quite a few experienced people up there. So
and so at some point you said to yourself, Idaho has got to get their act together. All right. Was it Idaho?
It was
not
Idaho.
Okay. I'm going to keep going.
So there's a scene, in addition to having to be out in the cold for this whole episode, there is a scene where you're hanging like on like hooks or whatever.
Yeah, man, hook, Robbie.
With the creepy old dude.
Super creep.
What were you actually hanging on? Do you remember?
Oh, gosh. I think they did have me hanging off of, they had me hanging off of something.
But I'm sure it was something you could get down between takes and rest your arms.
Maybe.
No, they impaled her on a meat hook.
I don't think I had. Maybe I had a harness on, and I don't.
Oh, that, yeah.
I don't remember. I honestly don't remember. I remember the car crash, but I wasn't even in that. My friend Monique, that would double me in a bunch of things, was in. I remember. That.
Okay,
that's a sick sequence, by the way. It is flipping amazing sequence.
That was also my first experience of driving in the car, where you're in a studio and it's they've got it.
Poor man's process.
Yeah. Exactly. And they're just shaking you with like two logs underneath or whatever, not two by fours, but it's such a funny, it's such like an out of body experience, because you're like, I'm really like a 5-year-old pretending to play like cops and robbers or whatever, you know?
Totally.
Like,
yeah.
There's no, I'm in the car and I'm just being shaken, and you know, it's a funny experience, but. The actual car crash with it all rigged up and everything. That was a cool sequence.
Yeah.
So
really
cool.
Well done.
So
but
cool.
I don't remember what type of meat hook I was up on.
You heard it here first here, folks. So speaking of meat hooks, yeah, what was your heart, as much as you can remember, because I know we're going back a while, what was your either least favorite or hardest thing to film in this episode?
There was a scene in a house in the woods. Maybe it was the same place where I was up on the hook.
Yeah.
But there was something that was difficult about, like, that's when I was seeing the creepy dude or something.
Yeah. And he cuts you.
Yeah. There was something in that I'm remembering that was just hard, because it's just technical and it's sort of CGI, or, you know what I mean? There was like a scene in Lucifer, and I remember talking to one of the writers that I've become really good friends with, not to turn it to Lucifer, but, this question kind of came up, and I was like, there was this one scene I just had so much trouble getting into. And he goes, yeah, we kind of noticed that in the, you know, and I'm like, God damn it. And he goes, but it cuts together fine. Like, not all takes you were really on, but it cut together good.
You're not supposed to notice that I was
not in. I was
telling you.
But it was one of those where it's so technical and there's so much CGI, and it's like, you know, I'm down in hell and I'm trying to save Uriel. I'm trying to save Lucifer and pull him back, but then I'm getting sucked into Uriel's, mind, whatever. And there was you never got to finish a take, because you had to keep getting interrupted by the stunt guy coming, because it was like, you're supposed to be re-stabbing somebody. So the prop keeps having to get run in and run out, and what, and it's an emotional scene and you're trying to stay in it. And it's like, pause, knife in. Okay, continue. Pause, knife out. Okay, back to one. Pause, knife in. And you're like, how am I supposed to stay in this emotion when I'm not even getting a 30-second run at it, you know?
Yeah.
And
yeah,
I remember something about that scene in the house had me feeling that of like, I'm having a hard time staying in this, the drama and the intensity of it.
Yeah. And because a lot of times too, they'll have you react to something off camera that's not actually happening too. Like, okay, now you see a ghost flies in from back from this dot.
Right. In reality, what you're seeing is some grip in the background with a cigarette. We're checking their phone, whatever. And I know, probably around the time I was really learning about how important eye lines are, and I have no problem now saying, clear the eye line. It's bad enough if I'm talking to somebody, you see somebody in the back, but if you're also trying to imagine something that's not there, and you're seeing people walk in and out and check their phone, and, you know, it's just completely, it takes you out of it.
I'm always like, clear the camera.
Yeah.
Just clear everything. Everybody
behind the camera, go away.
Yeah.
Well, let's talk about the emotion there, Robbie, because we were on that conversation about how like the emotions being broken up for that sequence in the cabin. There's a lot of emotion in this episode. There's a lot of emotion in this episode, you know, and carried by you. Did you find the set conducive to being able to achieve what you're trying to achieve, or the experience overall? I know a lot of it's outside, like when you see David's house, you're outside, and all, like, weather can be a factor, all these things can be a factor, but the story itself was really teed up to be a great vehicle for you and for your character. Did you find that you were, you know, it was a conducive environment to get where you needed to go?
Yeah. And that's one thing about the crews being experienced and knowing when to kind of be in your space. And you also learn as an actor to be able to tune people out to some extent too. I mean, I know I just said clear the eye line, but you know, right. if you're about to start a scene, you've got to get touched up, but you also still you're in your own head. But, you know, I had one time once where I was trying to get, you know, ready. We're about to start rolling. And I don't even know what show it was, but somebody come up to me and they're like, "Are you okay? You look upset." I'm like, "I'm about to start crying on screen." Like, right. like, why are you asking me if I'm okay? Like, we're about to roll. But it was just right. somebody that didn't understand that, you know, you can't just, not all people can just go action and tears or something, you know?
Right.
And you find yourself at some sets where, not intentionally, but they don't necessarily know that they're not following the script. Their job is to, you know, secure the perimeter from traffic. They're not necessarily clocked into the content of what's going on. And they'll be like laughing and joking. And you're like, this is the death of the mother sequence. Could we maybe can the laughter for a hot sec?
Exactly. And that, again, it just comes down to, and some people, you know, everybody's just doing their jobs. Sometimes you're not aware. And I've been the person too, coming into a set too loud or something, talking from coming in right. from outside or whatever. But like, yeah, I mean, crews really, I love working with crews and getting close to crews. And I know that there was one scene on Battlestar where it was an emotional, hard scene to film. And I didn't want to get up between takes. I didn't want to, like, I was chained and bound to the floor of like a prison cell. And I didn't want to get up because I found it disruptive to keep getting up and and everything. And they were so cute that they were just so sweet that they were like, okay. And they would, between setups, they would like just basically station somebody right by me so that I could stay laying there, but nobody was going to step on me while they're changing lights. I remember, you know, basically the same thing with the Supernatural set. Like, everybody was just very, very generous.
Yeah, that set was so great. It's hard to find, really, across the board, people that are that nice and welcoming. So you've done a lot of sci-fi, supernatural, drama, and comedy. Do you have a specific genre you like the most?
Not really. I think I like being able to have, you know, go in and do a lawyer role and then play, you know, Dracula, and then go play a detective, and then play this woman, you know, on Supernatural that heartbreaking at the end, right?
Right.
You don't know.
Right. Oh, yeah.
Just a normal woman, just normal everyday woman. And that's what I find fun, is being able to change genres and mix it up.
Well, I got to say, I became aware of your work on Lucifer. I was a fan of that show. Rob and I both ended up working on it, but before we worked on it, I was watching it, and it's a great show. You were great on that show, and it's been fun to go back and go, "Oh, wow, there she was on Supernatural."
Exactly, yeah.
Part of the group.
Yeah, that was my thought exactly, yeah. Part of the family.
Oh, thank you.
No, thank you. And thank you for carving out time to do this. It's like, you're just great in the episode. I mean, truly, there are guest star roles, and then there are guest star roles. I mean, this is a whole different animal in terms of being a guest star. You basically carried the whole episode, and the turns and nuances of your performance are just outstanding. So, you know, and hold up, by the way. It's not like suddenly you're watching something that feels dated. It feels like it was shot yesterday.
Totally holds up.
To this day, I get people talking to me about that episode and saying it was one of their favorite episodes. And it was just like, I mean, it was season 2 out of how many seasons did you guys do? 13, 14, something like that.
15.
Yeah. 15. Yeah.
And so I get it a lot. And I know that the fans like that episode, but it was a well-written episode, and I got lucky to get to play her.
The show got lucky to get you to play her.
Not everybody could have done that.
No.
Thank you.
Let me give you the praise the director never did. You crushed it.
There you go.
Thank you so much for being a part of
our...
Yeah, book is closed. Thank you so much for being here and being a part of the podcast. It's really special.
Thank you. Happy to be on it.
This is Jensen stopping in to say hey and let you know that we've got to take a quick break. I'm about to pop.
Hey, it's Richard Speight, and I got a question for you. Why are so many dogs suffering with health issues? Actress Katherine Heigl, who's helped save over 16,000 dogs through her foundation, says she's seeing more issues with dogs' joints, odors, and health than ever before. And after doing a ton of research, she feels there's one place we can look to support any dog's health. their food. So, she decided to create something she could actually feel good about feeding her dogs. It's called Superfood Complete. Superfood Complete is made with over 30 of the healthiest ingredients on the frickin' planet, including several superfoods vital to your dog's health. And hey, all of this sounds fantastic, but the proof is in the pudding, and what I mean is, do the dogs like it? Well, I can speak for my own dog, Luna. She freaking loves it. And that's saying something, because she's no vacuum cleaner, you know? I've seen dogs eat a sofa, but not Luna. Luna is very persnickety, very high maintenance, especially when it comes to what she eats. And Luna went crazy for this food, and I'm loving what it's doing for her. She's got great energy. She looks fantastic, and I'm assuming she feels great. She usually just says, arf, but I'm going to interpret that as, you know what, Rich? Feeling pretty good. So how do you get this fantastic food for your dog? Go to badlands.com/SPNTAN and order right now to get up to 50% off your regular price order with a 90-day money-back guarantee. If you want your dog to experience all these incredible things, go to badlandsfood.com/SPNTAN today.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop, or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
Hey, guess what?
We're back.
What a delight. What a just a fantastically talented person who really nailed it this episode and this interview.
And, you know, Tom Ellis always, you know, just describes her as just the sweetest person. She really is a real nice lady. So, and then comes to find out she's Canadian. All the Canadians are nice.
Dude, let's move on because we have got some mythology to get to and break down.
Ladies and gentlemen, it's time for mythology. Okay, haunted highways and roadside ghosts are some of the most popular supernatural stories in American folklore.
I love them.
Yeah, me too. Here are three of the most haunted roads in America. All right, you take this first one, Rich.
Boy Scout Lane in Stevens Point, Wisconsin. Now, the legend says a group of Boy Scouts were murdered by their bus driver. Other stories say they died in a fiery bus crash. Either way, damn that bus. While there are no known incidents of Boy Scouts dying in the area, there are several reports of floating lanterns, children's handprints, and a phantom bus, along with mysteriously appearing knots.
That doesn't say that. Boy Scout Lane in Stevens Point. You know, my brother used to play basketball in Stevens Point.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I mean, no, he's no Boy Scout. I know your brother.
That's right. Shades of Death Road in Warren County, New Jersey.
I don't believe that's a real road. That does not make any sense that there's a road called Shades of Death Road. Good Lord.
It was my high school band, though.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Supposedly, it was the site of numerous murders in the 1920s and 30s that have cursed the land. Other stories include a couple who crashed on prom night, killing a girl. She can still be seen wandering the road in her prom dress. Even other tales talk of town vengeance and malarian death. Whatever the source of the lore, Shades of Death Road is its real name, and the locals have taken to greasing the signposts to prevent people from stealing the street signs.
Okay, you know what? This is a note to local towns everywhere.
Yeah.
If you name a street or an area, shoot yourself in the face, Boulevard. Right. Or come stab your enemy and or friend in the stomach, Shire. I don't have sympathy for you. Like you got, don't do that. Don't advertise.
Right. Or Bottom Hole Lane.
What?
I was trying to think of other names of streets that you would, someone would want to steal.
Why would somebody want to, that's like, I mean, like, that's a, Robbie, that's an area, that's an erogenous zone for a lot of people. That's not.
No, I was thinking like a, I was thinking of like a hole in the earth.
That's not what people think of when they say bottom hole.
That's why they're going to steal the signs, the street signs.
I'm going to steal your street sign. Number three.
All right.
Route 2A, which is really creepy.
That's a name.
Route 2A in Maine is infamous for its terrible driving conditions, especially in the winter. There are multiple reports of a woman on the side of the road screaming for her husband. However, when approached, she disappears. Or so we hear, no one ever approaches her because she's a flipping ghost. Middle America, note to you. Also, don't name your scary roads stupid things like Route 2A. I mean, give it something. Yeah,
come on.
Dead Man's Curve or something. Like, you got to put a little panache, yeah, a little effort into it.
Agreed.
All right.
Did you have any haunted streets growing up that you lived nearby?
Well, Anus Lane. That was a, no, I'm just taking, wow. I'm just picking up where you left off.
Wow. Trying to keep it clean here, Rich.
Oh, yeah. Butthole Street, you called it.
Please. I said bottom.
Whatever. The, no, I don't recall them there being any haunted streets.
We had some scary houses that had been around for a while. We had this one house on my street where just the lady was a little bit scary. It wasn't so much we thought it was haunted as we thought she was terrifying.
Yeah, but that's a haunted house. I get that. Like, we had a couple of creepy homes and neighborhoods, but not the street.
Street, right, right, right.
You know,
the street. When, yeah,
you,
yeah,
turn down Hell's Canyon or, you know, these kind of things. Sure. I don't recall any.
Dead Man's Curve Lane.
Oh, shit, road. Let's get the F out of here, Boulevard. All right, that was good. Now, Robbie, you know what it's time
for? It's time for Trivia Fun Facts.
Fun Facts, Fun Facts, Fun Facts, Fun Facts.
All right, Trisha is one of many Battlestar Galactica alumni to appear on Supernatural. The most frequent, Mark Shepard.
The tallest, Tom O'Pinniquette.
Uh-huh.
This is the second time Dean has called Sam Jennifer Love Hewitt.
I thought maybe. Yeah. I heard that before. And I feel like it's not the first time that they said Haley Joel Osment either.
I don't know. I can't remember that one. But the J. Love Hewitt thing, I definitely, yeah, picked up on. This side trivia that's not written here, but factual. Jensen Ackles occasionally called Jennifer Love Hewitt Sam. Yeah, true.
Why?
I don't know. Pet name.
Wow. All right. When Dean shoots Greeley in the back of the head and his head explodes, the crew used a popping water balloon. Huh.
To celebrate?
No, like, I guess that effect of the blood going everywhere was, oh, from a popping balloon.
Oh, very cool.
Wow. There you go.
And it doesn't mention this, but there was the Haley Joel Osment reference in here.
Which I just mentioned.
Right. But, like, do you remember the other one?
Jennifer Love Hewitt?
No, you said Haley Joel, you think it's been mentioned before.
Oh, no, yeah, I don't remember where, but it just feels like, I feel like that was mentioned at one point. Anyway.
Here's another question for you guys.
Yeah.
There's a Ghostbusters joke in here. Hasn't there been a previous Ghostbusters joke?
I feel like there might have been.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think so, too.
Running out of references in season two. You know, people may not know this, but the Jennifer Love Hewitt reference was because Jennifer was on a very popular show at the time where she looked for ghosts, called The Ghost Whisperer.
What if we're wrong and it was just they're referencing a girl named Jennifer who loves Hewitt? And they were just trying to say that Jennifer loves Hewitt. But of course, we've now taken it to mean it's a reference to the actress.
That's true. You're right. We don't know. We don't know what the truth
is. We should just go back to Bottom Street. And
We can always go back to Bottom Hole Lane.
I guarantee you, you'll be going back to Bottom Hole. ladies and gentlemen, thank you so much for listening. This has been an outstanding episode. One of our dirtiest, courtesy of Rob Potty Mouth Benedict, but also one of our classiest because of Trisha Helfer.
Trisha Helfer. And thank you for supporting the podcast. Thanks for supporting our sponsors. And thank you for supporting us on Patreon.
And if you're not supporting us on Patreon, by all means, go do so. I'm telling you, we got hidden treats and added benefits for being a member and supporting the show. So go check it all out. There's videos, there's extra photos, extra content. You're going to love it. Go check us out.
Nice episode, Rich. Well done.
Yeah, same, buddy. Nice work. I laughed my face off.
Yeah. This episode of Supernatural features Jared Padalecki as Sam Winchester and Jensen Ackles as Dean Winchester.
Guest stars include Trisha Helfer, Winston Reckert, and Dan Gauthier. You know, we never really got to the bottom of your I Hate David thing. Is it jealousy?
Just jealousy.
Because of Molly being like such a classy lady, the character Molly, and then there's David like not giving an F.
Yeah, exactly. You know, he goes and he makes her drive, and then he makes her crash
because he's terrible with the map. Let's be honest, he's bad with directions.
Terrible with the map. He's being a real jerk about the map, and then he makes a pass at her.
But
and then
wait,
she crashes.
Okay, but I just pause there real quick. Well, you know, I'll say this: are you creepy? Yes, but also it was bad weather, so probably not the best time to grope your bride if she's driving.
I just don't love that they crash and then he leaves and goes and marries somebody else.
It was 15 years later.
For me, it was 30 minutes.
Rob, if you get a hangnail, we're replacing you on the show. Mid-sentence.
In fact, please welcome.
Mercy. All right.
Okay. Roadkill was written by Rael Tucker and directed by Charles Beeson.
Love that Charles Beeson. Miss that man. Edited by David Ekstrom. Music by Christopher Lennertz.
Supernatural is executive produced by Eric Kripke and Robert Singer.
The episode featured the following song, House of the Rising Sun by The Animals, which, by the way, they needle dropped like four times. That had to get costly.
Yeah, I know, man. I just kept thinking, thank God it's not season one where we couldn't hear that.
I know, and I'm telling you, I miss that in the show, in all shows. I miss the ability to afford badass music, you know what I mean?
Yeah. The episode originally aired on March 15th, 2007.
This episode of Supernatural Then and Now was hosted and executive produced by Richard Spate Jr. and Rob Benedict.
Produced by Stephen Hine. Written by Stephen Hine and Haida Holscher.
And edited and associate produced by Trey Booty.
What's up, Booty? Music provided by Tim Wynn.
The episode was recorded with the help of Sonic Fuel Studios.
This podcast is from Story Mill Media.
Follow the podcast on Instagram and Twitter at SPN Then and Now.
And join our Patreon at patreon.com/SPN Then and Now.
Bye. Now I just started recording, and the first thing that came up was Rob's Erotic Fantasies. Now I'm renaming the file Rob's Erotic Fantasies. What a delight. I'll start over. Dude, let's move on, because we have got some mythology to get to and break down.
All right, ladies and gentlemen. Yes.
Go do your thing.
It's time. It's that time. Mythology.
Mythology.
Haunted highways and roads.
You got to do the Rob.
Here are three of the most haunted roads in America. All right, you take this first one, Rich.
In Silver Lake, California.
Okay, you have to cut that. That's actually where I live. So please cut that. Steve, will you make a note to tell him to cut that? You're such a dickhead.
Oh my gosh.
I'm re-recording, and it's still saying erotic fantasy.
That was a funny one, Rob.
Story Mill Media.